You can't focus on performance because it's not going to work. You need to focus on fundamentals and get the team moving in the right direction. And the amount of dysfunction in your team is going to be directly correlated to the amount of difficult conversations that you're willing to have, which means it's directly correlated to the environment that you create where we can have difficult conversations. The second challenge is that I've never spoken to a leader who's told me, hi, and welcome to the Expansive Podcast, the podcast that's all about helping you to think expansively in your business and in your life. A podcast that's been going for 5 years, that have won multiple awards, that have had thousands and thousands of minutes of conversation between two good friends trying to figure out how to thrive, expand, live a good life in a time where things are changing very rapidly around us. And it's so funny, one of the memes I saw this week was a guy posted, oh, good news, there's a meteor about to hit Earth in like 5 years' time. I wanted to post it because it was so funny. It's like there's so many things happening in the world right now. It feels so overwhelming that the news of a meteor that might wipe out Earth feels like a bit of relief in some ways. It tells us a lot about where people's heads are at. So,
yeah. I think 2025 has got three major sort of themes: tension, transformation, and transcendence. It's like we're sitting in this incredible amount of tension, right? Like, is it right, the war? Isn't it? Should they be changing the name of the Gulf of Mexico? Like, we don't know what's right or what's wrong. We don't know. Like, everything's up in the air, right? And then what we have to do is we have to transform at an incredibly quick pace because of what AI is doing, because we can't keep up with the amount of AI. So really the only thing we can do is transcend the tension and the transformation. We have to get ourselves to a place where we elevate it above it, be more expansive towards it, so that we can almost be comedically sort of like engaging with it rather than being, I suppose, like drowning in it, which most of the world is actually doing at the moment. So it's quite a a unique space to be in.
You know, I was thinking about it when I was driving yesterday that I don't remember much of the 2008 financial crisis. Back then, I just qualified as a physio, and I was very narrowly focused on being a physio. And it felt to me like all the repercussions of what was happening in the world around me didn't really affect me. I was in my Zuma year, which was doing my community service year. So I was very blissfully actually unaware of what happened in that time.
Do you know why?
And then, hey?
Because you were poor. Because you were poor. You didn't have any money to use. I'm very singly focused on my 12 rand I had in my bank account. 2008 didn't affect me much.
I do remember my first paycheck, which was a community service paycheck at the time. Yeah. And it was for 8,500 rand per month.
Which that was what I was earning. $400.
$400.
Plus minus $300, $400.
Yes.
So, well done. Ka-ching-ching.
But I don't remember much of that time. The only recollection I have of really a big crisis, worldwide crisis, was obviously the pandemic and COVID. But I don't remember all the big sort of moments of turbulence that we've experienced over the years. And so I was wondering, like, because you know, you've been alive for much longer than I've been alive for. I don't know
3,600 days. In fact, I've been alive.
When you think of the world wars that you've lived through, and you, when you think of everything that you've experienced from a turbulence point of view, do you feel like it's intensified? Because that's what it feels like to me. I feel like this is way more intense than anything I've ever experienced from a change point of view. Is that what you feel as well, or? Maybe other times as turbulent?
No, I think what's different now is the amount of information we have access to. I think that's what's made it more turbulent. I think, you remember, I remember the Iraq war and Saddam Hussein and America going in, and we just had the news to listen to and CNN, and, you know, wherever we were watching that. And then there was just like one thing that was happening that everybody was focused on. Then there was 9/11, right? And everybody's focus was zoned in on this one thing. 2008 was this one thing. COVID was this one thing. Right now, it's not this one thing. It's like multiple things with multiple media sources. Yeah. So it's like, it's almost like from every angle of politics to financial to Bitcoin to war to gender neutrality to governments being toppled. It's a crazy time. But remember that, you remember I spoke to you about the fourth turning. Remember the fourth turning?
Yeah.
And the fourth turning is this 80-year saeculum that they discovered that humanity is going through. And the last time an 80-year cycle ended was 1946. And the 20 years leading up to 1946 was a total disaster around the world, because the last quarter of this 80-year saeculum is always about breakdown. There was war, financial crisis, social unrest, job losses. There was just so much going on from 1926 to 1946. And then what you had was the end of the war, and then you began spring from 1946 to 1964. And so we are literally, and this 80-year cycle ends in 2028. So we are literally 3 years away from the end of this incredible demise of the old world. And everything inside this old world has to be disrupted, from education to healthcare to finances to gender to you name it, is up for question. So we have another 3 to 5 years of this sort of implosion and winter, which is what they call it in the saeculum, the winter where the trees die, the hibernation happens, the things stop working, and then in spring you have another kick. So we are nowhere near the end of this, which is another interesting thing to think about, because we still have another few years of it to go.
You know, I wonder if winter might be extended, because it feels to me like there's going to be so much happening in the next 3 years that it's really going to take a bit of time for people to find their feet and to feel like they've moved into a new beginning or into a spring. But who knows? I guess that's one of the challenges of the time that we are in, is that
you don't know.
Who knows? Like, you have literally no idea what's coming around the corner. You look at the future and you go, oh, we see these like few big companies that are taking control of artificial intelligence, and then out of the corner comes DeepSeek and like just completely like upends it. And all of a sudden you're like, okay, well, what's happening? And you have Sam Altman going, I saw a video of him saying, there's no way you can compete with us against, like, you know, on this, don't try and come into this space. Yeah, and then here comes DeepSeek and just kind of torpedoes that whole statement. So
let me tell you, I've got a crypto investment team that we work with, and we're thinking about what we're investing in. And so we did a major move of strategy to move away from meme coins and to move to agent AI coins, because that was going to be the next things. We all were in agreement. This is what we're going to do. We transferred all the money over to agents AI, and DeepSeek arrived. All of a sudden, all of those things. we all looked at each other. We're like, this is impossible. Like, how are we supposed to even, like, what? We lost so much money. We're like, what are we supposed to do with this shit? Anyway,
what a crazy time to be living
crazy
in.
Crazy time.
And
crazy.
And it's so difficult to know what the next best move is to make. And I'm writing a post right now, which is, it's not about figuring out how to be the best at playing the game. It's really just about playing the game. You know, just don't fall in love with the games that you are playing. Just fall in love with playing. That's it.
Yeah.
And just stay in the game, whatever game you choose to play. Listen, so today I wanted to take you through a session that I did recently for an organization around transformational leadership. And I want to share some of the high-level ideas that come from that session. But before we get to that, we can't not just quickly spend some time talking about the fact that you are now a top 5 global guru in the futurist category. Dude, that is amazing. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much. I actually forgot about that. As you said that sentence, I was like,
for a second.
Oh,
You knew where I was going. Yes. Congratulations, dude. It's absolutely amazing. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind either that this podcast really put you on the map.
I like, there was a very small congratulations to you, John, but let me explain to you how I added to your fifth in the world. Thank you for that 30 seconds of jubilation. I appreciate it. Let me sit for that 30 seconds. Look,
listen, you always somehow snipe me from a paddle point of view. So I'm trying to be more like John.
Of course.
It's an incredible feat. Yeah.
Thank you. What's most interesting is how many likes your comment got on LinkedIn. Am
I? I wonder how many people got it, though.
Yeah, well, the 17 people that liked it, which is a high number for LinkedIn likes on a comment. I haven't seen that many.
Fair enough.
So to be honest with you, this is so weird. I again forgot about it. Like, I wasn't even thinking about it. Then I see somebody post something on LinkedIn that they're part of the Global Gurus Futurist. And I thought to myself, oh, this guy has picked up the link from 2024 and now he's marketing it. So I didn't even read the link. I was like, I wasn't thinking. Then I see a second person share it. And I think to myself, what's happening? Now all of a sudden these people are sharing last year's. Then I look and it's 2025, not 2024. Mm. And then I look and I'm fifth. I was like, no way.
Amazing.
Again, it's exactly the same thing that happened last time. So look, it's been...
That's so cool.
It's been phenomenal. There's been a lot of movement around those posts. My post on LinkedIn has gone really viral. It's like 300 comments, 600 likes, viewed 20,000 times. Fantastic for brand building. I think Global Gurus, I did some research into them. They're a research company from America and they are categorizing the best of the best in the field. Look, to be honest, there are a few futurists that are not even on the list that I think should be on the list. So they've obviously, it's not a perfect list and I understand that. But to be amongst these people with Ray Kurzweil, with Rohit Talwell, with Amy Webb, with all these people, it's just like it's an incredible, incredible feat. And I'm just so...
Phenomenal.
It really is, you know, to be playing on the global field. I remember coming up in the game and watching Dion Chang and being so mesmerized by him and just so enjoyed his work. And every time I met him, I was like trying to get as much information out of him as possible. And, you know, he's number 13 and I'm number 5. And
oh, really?
Congratulated him. Yeah, I congratulated him. I said, well done to him. But, you know, he was one of the heroes that I was looking up to when I was coming up into the game, you know. And so just really fantastic. Thank you for bringing it up. And team and I are doing everything we can to market it and get it out there. And we're very proud of it. So really, really good.
Yeah, you should be. Yeah, you should be.
Thank you.
And I was also happy to see some comments just reminding you to also slow down and take it in. Which is very much on point and on theme for a lot of what we've been talking about this year already, is just to take in the applause and the and the achievement. So, and it came from Cherie, and Cherie was actually, she worked with me on Think Week for a while, so it was great to see her pop up as well.
She made a comment on there.
Yeah, she made a comment saying, like, my wish for you is to slow down and to really take in the achievement. Yeah.
Oh, wow. I was in such a rush. I didn't even see it.
Well, also, you know, when there's so many comments coming on a post, it's difficult to keep up with all of it.
It was so great to see, dude. Good highlight.
So great to see.
Good highlight. Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
We always say, you know, you have to work until the people that you admire become your peers. And I think you've done that beautifully. Right. And it is absolutely very well deserved. You work hard. You put in the effort. On stage, off stage, to work on releasing old patterns, to work on repatterning for the future. True. So absolutely well deserved. And happy to bring another award onto the pod.
Yes, thank you. And thank you for playing such a big part in it. I got invited back to go speak for NASA and just got the email
excellent.
2 days ago. Yeah, so they're having another conference, invited me back and we had our first briefing yesterday. And then last night I did a podcast called The Rise of Humanness from the States, created by a guy called Chris Nolan. And in the background, he had 2 Emmy Awards and 1 Golden Globe Awards in the background.
Yeah.
So he's a movie maker and he's making a movie. And his last interview with Salim Ismail. And I think the next one is with Peter Diamandis. And I was last night and I was like,
jeez,
listening to this. Yeah. And I was like, Salim before, Peter next, me here, that Golden Globe in the background, NASA briefing earlier in the day. I was like, wow, it's all happening. It is all happening.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful. Yeah, yeah. And you're right. You need to slow down and just appreciate it. So thank you so much for that reminder.
For sure.
Thank you.
All right. Okay. So with let's talk about transformational leadership. The context for the session was that we had done 2 sessions prior, and in those 2 sessions, the first session we spoke all about the need and necessity for change and the forces driving change and the fact that there's internal changes that we want to accomplish because these are the things that help us to get to who we want to be or where we want to go. And so we always have those desires to close the gap between us and the better version of us. And that by itself should be enough motivation for us to change. But it's not just that. We also have the fact that we have to change with change and the world that's changing around us. And so these two combined really provide a very compelling motivation for you to change. And that was like kind of the first session, was just establishing this need that we have and that we often really struggle to make these changes. The second session we spoke about, if we are going to make changes, then we need to realize that one of the major roadblocks that prevent us from making those changes is that we don't deal with the internal components of change, the internal aspects of it. And so we spoke about a few different models for understanding change. One would be, you know, we've spoken on the pod a lot about it a lot, is the transitions model from William Bridges that says that when we deal with change, there's external change, but also internal transition. That internal transition is dealing with endings, going into the wilderness, and finally getting to the new beginning. And that's actually a model that really spoke to me a lot during the pandemic. And it's kind of just carried with me. And today is an ingrained worldview for me. When I think of change, it immediately comes into my mind.
You've actually commented on it a few times when we're chatting and on WhatsApp. You're like, wilderness.
It's always... Yeah, it's always just there, man. And it's such an apt description. And it's old as time. And when you think of the oldest tribes that you might have uncovered, like they always had rituals. For example, the ritual for a boy becoming a man, you know, there's an ending, which is you get kicked out of the village, like a very physical ending. Then you go into the wilderness where you have to survive for X amount of time. And then finally you come back and you get into the new beginning. Now you're a man. So like this is as old as time. And it's a deep part of our psyche. And once you understand this, you start realizing that it's all about being able to shift your identity when change is happening. And the example that I've given before is when I started speaking. So for those of you who are very new to the podcast, I qualified as a physiotherapist. I spent some time as the founder of a self-development group for men. And then I finally moved into the speaking space and into the leadership space. And I remember very clearly there was a time when the external change had happened. I was standing on stage speaking for big organizations, but internally I still felt like a physio. That transition hadn't occurred. And it was very disjointed. I didn't feel like I was good on stage. It was terrifying for me to step onto stage. And I very clearly remember when those two things finally aligned, when the actions I was taking was aligned with who I was now. And now reflecting back on it, I realized that I was in the wilderness, recalibrating identity to finally get to the new beginning. And so that second session was then, you know, really about understanding change for yourself and the deeper nuances of it, because the better we can understand that, the better we can lead change for others. And then the third session, which I'm going to take us through now, or at least the highlights of it, is that now we focus outward, because if you're a leader, you realize that it's not about you. It's about the people that you serve. It's about the people that you lead. And we are in a time of great transformation, and in a great time of great transformation, what we need is transformational leaders. So what we know is that it's always been important for leaders to have IQ, which is your intelligence quotient, to have EQ, which is your emotional quotient. And part of that emotional quotient for me is also understanding the emotional signature and aspects of change. AQ, which is adaptability quotient. But the one that I really want to focus on is CQ, which is collaborative quotient, or your collaborative intelligence. And this is your ability to connect to and collaborate with people to unlock more innovation, creativity, and ultimately potential. And the reason why this is so important is because we live in a world full of complexity where we no longer face simple challenges to solve. So when we think of companies, for example, like Chegg is a company that is in the exam and homework preparation space. They did very well for a very long time. And then along comes a free tool called ChatGPT, and all of a sudden just wipes out 99% of the value of the company. They lost 500,000 paying customers. They bled $14.5 billion. And they had an AI tool inside of the business. So it's not that they were standing still and not doing anything. They launched their own internal artificial intelligence. It just didn't matter. And so this company has to really figure out, where do we go from here? And it won't come from one person. It won't come from one guy sitting down and thinking, this is where we need to go. It's going to be a collaborative effort. And that's what we need to realize when it comes to the challenges of today is that when there is complexity, the best way to solve that complexity is going to be through collaboration. Now, when I speak to leaders, what I often realize is that collaboration, people inside of an organization, is one of the best parts of it. Like, we love spending time with our colleagues and our teammates. But when I ask them what is one of the most challenging parts of being a leader, it's always the people as well. It is that it can be highly challenging to get people to move in the right direction. And of course, we have all the emotions and frustrations and things that come with being a human. And when you compound that with many, many people, it becomes very tough. So what I then realized is that every team has a few challenges that we need to address if we're going to be
Can I just stop you there for a second?
Yeah, go for it.
So the thing with collaboration for me is the internal dialogue of showing up open to that conversation. Do you touch on that with the internal work that needs to be done to be collaborating?
I'm not sure if I touched on in this specific talk.
Okay.
Maybe I do. Let's see when I get to the transformational leadership stuff and see if there's a tie-in maybe to what you're saying.
Because I always find myself to be much more collaborative when I am in a calm space. When I'm in a stress space, or I think somebody's taking advantage of me, or somebody's competing against me, my collaboration shuts down. And so I have to build a lot of trust within myself to calmly collaborate without thinking I'm getting taken advantage of, you know?
So I think that's really important. And I think as a leader, it's also important to create that environment for people where they can be calm and feel collaborative.
That's right.
And we're definitely going to touch on that.
Okay.
So every team has three challenges that they need to overcome. The first is that there's always dysfunction in a team. And you can think of this on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being that there's no dysfunction, 10 being highly dysfunctional. And so if your team is a 2, 3, or 4, it means that there's very little dysfunction. You can focus on performance. Whereas if it's a 7, 8, or a 9, it means there's a lot of dysfunction. You can't focus on performance because it's not going to work. You need to focus on fundamentals and get the team moving in the right direction. And the amount of dysfunction in your team is going to be directly correlated to the amount of difficult conversations that you're willing to have, which means it's directly correlated to the environment that you create where we can have difficult conversations. The second challenge is that I've never spoken to a leader who's told me that they don't want their team to be improved. But when I ask them, you know, do you create dedicated time for learning and development? The answer is almost always no. In fact, when I've done some surveys around this, about 60 to 70% of leaders or teams tell me they don't have dedicated learning and development time. And that blows my mind, because how can you get the improvement without putting in the effort? And then the third thing, and this is maybe one of the biggest challenges for teams, is that leaders don't know how to lead teams in complex and transformative times. And leadership has an outsized impact on team performance and team cohesiveness. Like, every single aspect of a team is improved or brought down, negatively affected by leadership. There's this thing that Gallup has been measuring for many, many years called employee engagement. And employee engagement really is a mashup of two things. It's work involvement, and it is your emotional commitment to the organization. So these two things are measured through employee engagement. And what they have found is that when an employee is highly engaged, they are really dedicated and committed to the organization. They bring their best. They buy into the story of the business. And it's your star employee. You know, it's the people who really go the extra mile to make this thing succeed. And of course, people who are not engaged are the opposite. They come and they do the work because they feel they just need to do the work. They aren't there to thrive or prosper. They just show up and do the bare minimum of what is expected of them. And the thing that blows my mind the most is that 60 to 70% of employee engagement can directly be attributed to how the leader and the manager shows up. Sure. So 70%, you know, that's a huge number. It just shows us the incredible impact.
Yeah, I remember at school, you remember subjects were either great or not great based on the teacher. Like, if the teacher was great and I really wanted to learn geography, and if the teacher was an idiot, I hated geography.
Yeah.
So remember that.
The obvious question that we have to ask ourselves is that if, as leaders, we have this disproportionate impact on the people that we lead, then how should we be showing up for them during this specific moment in time that we currently find ourselves in? And the answer to that, in my opinion, is that we need to be transformational leaders. And I don't say this lightly. I don't say this because the literature says so. I say so because in times of great transformation, people are experiencing a lot of turmoil and uncertainty, but they need to go through the transformation. And you have the ability to directly impact that transformation for them. And so it's not simply about leading anymore. It's about transforming. And so what they need to do is figure out, how do we become more transformational leaders? Now, this is a style that has actually been studied for many, many years. Transformational leadership was first mentioned back in the 1970s, really old, actually. And since then, it has become the most researched leadership style that there is. And what's quite fascinating to me is that even though it's so researched, I don't hear a lot of people speaking about it. In fact, I don't think I've ever heard anyone else, except for me, talk about the four components of transformational leadership, which is kind of weird to me. And we're going to talk about those four components just now. But when you look at the definition of it, it says that transformational leadership is a dynamic and adaptive leadership style that inspires and empowers individuals to exceed their personal and professional goals by fostering a culture of innovation, inclusivity, and continuous growth. It's a mouthful. When I think of it, all I'm thinking about is that if you're a transformational leader, then what you do is you change things for the better. You change your relationships, your people, your organization for the better. You are transforming yourself and those around you. And what I love about transformational leadership then is that there are four very specific behaviors that we can align ourselves with that help us to be more transformational in how we show up. And so that's what I'm going to take you through for the rest of the session, is what are those four things that you can measure yourself against and that you can work towards so you can be more transformational.
Very good.
What are some of your thoughts?
I'm also quite surprised that this came up in the 70s. There was no need for transformation back then, if you think about it. It was like the world was so stable and really aimed at stability. And think about the leadership style then still was army-based. Come in, we break you down, we build you up.
Yes,
autocratic, it's my way or the highway. And that's kind of what, so this for this to come up in the 70s is way ahead of its time. So obviously nobody's really speaking about it, because I think only over the last 5 to 10 years has it now become really important to apply a different type of style. So yes, I'm looking forward to understanding the four different components.
All right, so let's dive in. The first one is, and you'll notice the language is quite embellished, and this is taken directly from the original work that was done. So the first one is, individualized.
Thou shalt not.
It's almost like
thou shalt not.
you aren't far off.
Sir Lancelot, thou shalt not lead with the sword.
Okay. All right. So the first one is individualized consideration. So individualized consideration is about treating people as individuals, treating them with compassion and care, and realizing that they have certain needs, that their achievements and accomplishments should be recognized and celebrated. So it's really just focusing in on the people and having a real people-centered focus inside of your business.
That kind of makes sense. Yeah, it makes sense in today's
world.
And quite a luxury in the 70s.
A luxury in the 70s. One of the key components of individualized consideration is that you become more coach-like. So there are two things that happen here. The first is that you become more coach-like. So this means that you start focusing on asking better questions, that you are there to provide more guidance, and that you model certain behaviors for people as well. But you are good at creating a space where they can think through challenges. You aren't just trying to solve things for them. Yeah. And again, this ties back to what we said earlier, which is that you don't have all the answers. As a leader, you don't have all the answers. But you have people around you who might have answers, and therefore you need to be able to tease that out of them, bring their best thinking out of them. So the first part is, be more coach-like in how you show up. The second part is, you need to be much better at creating and holding space for others. So for our South African listeners here at The Expansive, we don't often recommend other podcasts, but when we do, we like to look over to our good friends over at Investec, and they've just released their latest episode that's all about the upcoming 2025 budget speech. So the Minister of Finance will be delivering this speech on the 19th of Feb in Parliament, and it feels like a very important speech this year around. I mean, it's always important, but there's so much turbulence and anxiety and things happening around us. And so the speech really has the power to drive growth, to restore confidence, and to set the stage for an investment upgrade But the question is, will it?
Yeah, will it is always the big question, right? I mean, South Africa right now is in junk status, and that really is a tough place to be because it means borrowing costs are higher, the interest rates are much steeper, and it's a tougher environment for business and consumers. This budget really needs to prioritize economic growth. It's not just a sort of nice to have. It's an absolute necessity of where South Africa finds itself. So what do we need to see? Well, you know, a budget that creates a real and true environment for businesses to thrive, where people can really increase their purchasing power, and where investors can really restore their confidence.
So, you know, on the pod, they're asking some very critical questions this year. What impact will the budget 2025 have on South Africans, on businesses and investors? Will we see significant tax hikes? And maybe most importantly is, how can this budget set a path for growth for South Africa in 2025? So it's a great conversation on the Investec podcast. If you want to be in the know-how, then tune in, have a listen, and the links, all of it, are in the description to make it easy for you to access. When I was in Mexico last year for my speaking tour, every chapter that we visited, we had dinner with the leaders of the group. And when I was coming back, I wrote this reflection that I wanted to read for you that was also part of the presentation. Because I think it captures very well this idea of creating and holding space. I'm not going to read the entire thing. I'm just going to catch on from a small part here. So every touch point flow and my talks are well received. But what really stood out for me were the tables. When King Arthur gathered his knights that would ultimately help him rule over the lands, he gathered them around the now very famous Round Table. The table was more than something to sit around. It was a leadership tool that allowed for strategizing, planning, and most importantly, connection. During my trip, I sat around many tables with many great leaders. In every instance, the table became so much more than the wood it was made from. This transformation occurred because leaders authentically stepped into the role of host, welcoming people to their table, inviting conversation to flow, and creating deep connection. It's important that as leaders, we remember that we are here to hold space for the transformation of others. And it need not be complex. Sometimes all it requires is a table and a welcoming host. So may you look differently at the meeting table when you walk into your office tomorrow. Beautiful. Yeah. Nice, eh?
Beautiful.
So those are the two ideas that I think are important when it comes to individualized consideration, is that the two roles that you really take on is the role of coach.
Host.
So I'm here to help you think. Mm. And the role of host. And the role of
That's
host
so funny.
Is...
Yeah.
I create the space without interjecting all my thoughts into it. I'm holding it for you to fill.
Do you remember when we did the networking masterclass and it was
host,
like have the conversation as a host, and that's be the host of the conversation. Very nice.
Yeah.
I like it. Coach and host.
Coach and host. So the second dimension of transformational leadership is inspirational motivation. Inspirational motivation is about encouraging people to achieve a high level of performance. It's about helping people to rally around the vision for the organization and where we are going. But it's also, and this is the key one for me, it's about how do we communicate change to the people around us? Because how we communicate change ultimately matters. When we think of change, we often think that change starts the moment that you start doing the new thing. But that's actually not right. Change starts the moment that you are presented with new information. Because in that moment, you are either going to be open to that change and be curious about it and explore it, or you are going to just shut it down. And so the very clear implication here for us as leaders is that how we present that information is going to really matter. Because how we present that might lead people to go, yes, I'm open to seeing where this might go, or like not interested. So how the message arrives matters. Now, our default response here, or our default way of trying to communicate change, is that we try and scare people into it. And we hear this all the time. Things like AI is going to take your job, or if you don't upskill, you know, someone using AI is going to take your job. And what we try and do is we try and create urgency. And we think that by using these scare tactics, we're going to get people to start all of a sudden creating some movement. But there's a big problem with this approach. And the problem is that you aren't really considering people's state of mind. And when there is change and turbulence, the state of mind that people are most likely going to find themselves in is in some sort of a survival mode. Now, survival mode is something that we've spoken about a ton on the podcast. So I'm not going to go into that in depth right now. But it's quite clear to me, you know, even if you just think about how I opened today's pod, was to say that we are kind of hoping for a meteor that might hit in 5 years' time because it is just so overwhelming. Like, you can't look at that and gloss past it. You have to realize that people really are sitting in survival mode. They really are feeling overwhelmed. And so what happens then is that in survival mode, there are three things that you experience. You are very active, going through your day, just putting out fires. You are operating from fear, frustration, and anxiety. And the things you do in survival mode keep you in survival mode. In survival mode, it feels like everything is going to go wrong. And when it goes wrong, it's going to be catastrophic. And we keep perpetuating this pattern over and over and over again. And the question you need to ask yourself is that if someone is in survival mode, do you think trying to scare them into change is going to help them change? And of course, the answer is no, because when you are trying to scare them into changing, all you are doing is you are positioning change as the enemy, as the threat. And when someone is in survival mode, not sure of themselves, not sure if they have what it takes to overcome the threat, then their most natural response is going to be defense. And the research actually backs this up. It says that when people are threatened, but they aren't convinced of their ability to deal with the threat, then under those conditions, the resulting behavior is defense. That's the game that they are going to play. They aren't going to engage with it because you've made it even more scary. And even think about, you know, someone who's being told that AI is going to take their job. Not only is the change overwhelming because I have to learn a new skill, but also you are asking me to engage with a thing that might destroy me. So you are just adding additional pressure. Now, what this thing tells us is we need to be mindful about the language we use when we're trying to get people to change. Like I've just said, the default kind of mode that we might go to is something like scare or fear. So AI is going to take your job. But sometimes even just a small reframe can help us to better receive the message. So Fiverr is a company that is a freelancing marketplace. The first time I came across Fiverr was many, many, many years ago. And back then, you could literally buy any freelancing service on the site for $5. And that's why it's called Fiverr. Today, they're a huge marketplace and people charge a lot of money on Fiverr these days. So it's not bound to $5 anymore. But they ran this awesome campaign at the start of last year. And they had all these freelancers that they featured. And in big text, it said, AI took my job. And then in a small tagline at the bottom, to the next level. And at the same time as launching this campaign, they also opened up an entire category on their website where freelancers could now use AI to sell copywriting and graphic design and video editing services. And so what they did is they positioned change not as the enemy, but as something that can augment what you already do, that you can already start selling as well. So you can see this, like just a small subtle reframe takes it from something that's trying to scare people into change to something that invites them into change. And this for me is the heart of transformational leadership, is not scaring, but invitation. Because those two things have two very, very different energies. And so we have this very, you know, cliche Viktor Frankl quote that I can't get away from that says, between stimulus and response, there's a space. And in that space lies our greatest power, the power to choose how we respond. And in the context of what we are saying today, it's that you need to remember that when you receive information from the outside world, they might frame it for you in a pretty negative way. As leaders, we need to take ownership of reframing that for ourselves so we can engage with the change rather than disengage with it. But as leaders, we also need to know that the moment you want to go and communicate that change to others, there's a space. And in that space is your ability to reframe it for others as well. Because that's what transformational leaders do. So that is inspirational motivation.
Love it.
Thoughts?
Wow. That's sure. Again, you know, in listening to you, is I'm a very different person after a meditation and very happy to do this. Before a meditation, I find it, you know, like we are totally different people before we do that meditation. I come out of that meditation and I'm just a vastly different person. And this becomes so obvious what you're saying. pre that, I want to kill people. I'm like, this idiot, that monkey, this knob. And then I come, I get heart-centered and I'm like, okay,
yeah,
I can do this. So love your points. Again, I think it's that internal ability as a leader to stay heart-centered. And if you're able to stay heart-centered, these become obvious. These actually become a natural extension of an evolved human being.
Mm.
So I love them as anchor points of how we should be showing up. And if you're not showing up like that, the tool set of meditation or psychedelics or whatever it may be to bring you back into the space so you can naturally be more a transformational person.
Mm.
But love them. It's great, great points to keep in the back of your mind.
All right. So the third one is idealized influence. Idealized influence really is exactly what it says. It is showing up as a leader that models the behavior that they want to see in those around them. This to me is the most straightforward of all the different dimensions. It just means that, especially in the context that we're speaking about today, if you want others to change, then you need to model how people should go through change. The research, again, backs this up. It says that a leader's openness to change is central to the adaptation process.
Absolutely.
That makes total sense. Of course, if you aren't open to change, your organization and the people in your organization won't be able to change.
Obviously.
And so two things is, one, how are you talking about change in the boardroom when we see these things happen around us? Is the language that you are using dismissive and fear-based, or is it thinking about the optimism and the potential of what might be? And secondly, is people need to also see that you are willing to engage with the internal processes of change. Because if you try and just avoid that, then your people will avoid it. And that means that you remain anchored into the past. You haven't dealt with letting go of how things used to be and where we used to be. And because of that, you can't move into where we are going. So people need to see that you are willing to engage with the difficult endings of change. And if they can see that, then they are more willing to do the same.
Brilliant. Of course.
The fourth
your
one.
Your actions. Wait. Your actions yep. are so loud. I can't hear a word you're saying.
Exactly. Exactly that. The fourth one is intellectual stimulation. This really just means that we are willing to challenge people to think differently, that we are willing to challenge assumptions, that we encourage people to take risks and try new things. It means that we are good at asking better questions to get to better answers. But there's something that when I look at the original research here that I think that they missed out on. And that is that it's not really about the action of challenging people to be better and do better. It's about creating the environment in which people can be challenged to think better and do better.
Nice.
That is the big shift here. And when we are trying to challenge, when we are trying to take risks, when we open ourselves up to questioning, those are all highly vulnerable acts. And mostly, we obviously don't like to be vulnerable. And especially, we won't be vulnerable in an environment that doesn't support it or that isn't conducive to it. When I work with teams, I'll often say that when you create a space for connection, you create a space for transformation. And really what this just says is that when you create a space for vulnerability, you create a space for transformation. So we need to be asking ourselves, what is the environment that we need to cultivate that's going to create a space for connection and for vulnerability? And for that, I need to tell you about Project Aristotle. Project Aristotle was a big thing run by Google where they were trying to figure out what are the most important factors that will create a high-performing team. And of course, being Google, they crunched all the data. They looked at all the numbers. They had sociologists and statisticians and psychologists and everyone involved in trying to figure this out. And it didn't matter for how long they were trying to find patterns in the data. They couldn't get anything. Like everything kind of broke when they tried to piece it together. And they kept doing their research. They kept trying to find the cipher that would unlock all the data. And then one day they came across a piece of research where the researchers gathered 609 participants and then divided them into random groups and then gave them like very simple tasks to do. And these would be tasks like taking a brick and finding interesting use cases for that brick or going to do grocery shopping together. There was sort of a trick to it, which is that some people needed to sacrifice some of the things on their list for others to gain so that they could maximize their shopping as a team. And so they had them do all these small tasks. And at the end, what they find is that the teams who did poorly on one task would do poorly on all of them. And the teams who did well on one task would do well on all of them. And they thought, well, what is creating this sort of consistency? Is it about who's on the team? And they realized that it's not. What they found was that it's all about how do the people on the team treat each other? And so this is something that is known as team norms. So how do we show up for each other in a team? And so using this piece of data, they go back to their original data that they had, and they realize that, okay, now it starts to make sense. Now we start unpacking team norms, and there are five things that are really important for us to have a high-performing team. The fifth one was impact. So the work that I do impacts those around me, my colleagues, clients, and community. In fourth place was meaning. The work that I do is personally meaningful to me. I find purpose in what I do. In third place was structure and clarity. So the processes, roles, goals, objectives, all KPIs, all those things that might be a natural part of being in a team. In second place was a dependability. So I trust you to do the work that you are supposed to do to the highest standard. But then what emerges as the most important thing out of all of them is this idea of psychological safety. And yeah. Psychological safety is something that Amy Edmondson had actually written about before in her book called Fearless Organization. And the way that she characterized it is that it's our ability to take interpersonal risks in a team. So to be vulnerable, meaning we can ask questions, share ideas, raise concerns, and admit mistakes without the fear of retribution, without the fear of being kicked out of the team. But a definition that I actually enjoy more, which comes from a guy called Timothy Clark, is that psychological safety is when we create an environment of rewarded vulnerability. So the moment we step into any sort of group setup or environment, our threat detection radars go up. And we are looking for how are people being treated when they are being vulnerable. So when they ask questions, raise concerns, share new ideas, and admit to mistakes. And if we see that people are being punished, so blamed, named, shamed, then we are going to self-censor. Whereas if we see that people are being treated fairly and with openness and non-judgment, then we are more likely to engage. And it should be quite obvious why this is really important. We need people to ask questions because when people ask questions, we get to challenge the status quo. We get to find better answers and clearer thinking. When people raise concerns, we get to prevent catastrophes. We get to stop it in its track or instead of getting it to progress. When people share ideas, we find new paths towards a newer destination. And when people admit mistakes, we get to stop the bleeding. And this is actually a big part of psychological safety, is that so often in organizations, people know things are heading down the wrong path, but they aren't willing to speak up about it. And an example that I cite is that in 2018, you had the 737 MAX disasters that happened. So the first 737 MAX takes off from Indonesia. A little bit into the flight, it nosedives and crashes. It kills 189 people. Boeing says, there's something wrong with our software. We realize that there's a flaw. It creates this uncommanded nosedive maneuver, and we're going to fix it.
I remember.
And a year later, another one, an Ethiopian Airlines flight takes off, also 737 MAX, and a little bit into the flight, it nosedives. It kills another 157 people. And of course, they launch huge investigations into this. And what they find is that internally, people were discussing this all the time and saying what a terrible plane this is. Some of the emails they found said that this is a plane designed by clowns, or some of the engineers in the project said, would you put your family on a 737 MAX simulator trained aircraft? And they were like, no, like, of course we wouldn't. And what they then find is that people knew, but no one spoke up because they feared being reprimanded. Yes. They feared that when layoffs came around, that they would be at the top of the list. And so as a result, disaster. So what is then needed? And, if we just cascade back to where we started, was that we were saying that you need intellectual stimulation as the fourth dimension. But to have intellectual stimulation, you can't just go and challenge people. You need to create the environment in which they can be challenged. And that environment is an environment of rewarded vulnerability. And if you want people to be vulnerable, then the most important thing for you to remember is that vulnerability ultimately starts with you. That and this is a difficult thing for leaders to do, because we want to show that we have the answers, that we are perfect, that we can deal with the things around us. We don't want to show that we are a work in progress, that we have concerns and uncertainties, that we make mistakes, that we have shortcomings and weaknesses. But ultimately, if you want vulnerability, you need to model vulnerability. And I remember at sort of the end of last year, I was working with a team. We had our first session and we spoke about, what does it look like to be a part of this team? Like, who do we want to be? And by the time we were done, we had this beautiful whiteboard full of characteristics that we wanted to emulate. We had a bit of a break in between. A month later, we did our second session. And I came into that session kind of thinking we'll just carry on from where we were before. And I opened the session by saying, you know, how are things going? And the leader of the team sat there in silence for about 30 seconds. And then she said, I feel like I'm failing this team. I'm not sure if the leadership that I'm showing at the moment is going to help the team with the challenges that we have. And she just went on this monologue for 5 minutes, just sharing how she's feeling a bit insecure about the way that she's showing up as a leader. And by the time she was done, it created this knock-on effect. The lady that went after her said, you know, I've been in hospital for quite a bit of time this year. And during that time, I was thinking, should I come back to this team? And it just kept going and kept going. And they had these incredibly honest conversations that all started with the leader opening up. And by the time they were done, I was taking notes in the background. We had an entirely new list of things to work on, things that came from a really raw and vulnerable space, things that were really true, that weren't hiding or masquerading behind just the logical things that we thought of in the previous session. But more importantly, coming out of that session, everyone said that now they feel seen. That for the first time in the entire history of the team, they feel seen. And I think that really is the power of vulnerability, is that when you as a leader can model it, then that's where we end up, is that we end up with true connection. And when we create that connection, we create a space for transformation. So that brings us full circle to the four dimensions of transformational leadership. So the first one was individualized consideration, which is you showing up as the coach and the host. We spoke about inspirational motivation, which is really just about how do we reframe change for ourselves and for others. Thirdly was idealized influence, so modeling the behavior that we want to see, and specifically modeling how we go through change. And then fourthly was intellectual stimulation, but realizing that it's not just about the act of challenging people, but about creating the environment in which people can be challenged. So in a nutshell, that is how you become a more transformational leader in 2025.
Yeah, fantastic. I mean, it's really just being an elevated human, you know, really working intentional. On yourself and
intentional.
Yeah, very intentional and a hell of a lot of work, you know, to be leading people is no joke, because you got to almost put yourself behind the team and to be vulnerable in that space, which is not easy, you know. So hats off to the leaders
really,
getting
hard.
It right. And And hats off
it's really
to you
tough.
For helping them and showing them some really valuable tools to be able to apply this ability to elevate and evolve yourself as a leader and ultimately as a human. Thank you so much. I feel better at listening to that. You know, I feel, it's a good reminder to always hear that and to say, okay, where do I need to work? What do I need to do? Like, where's my gaps there? Love it. Thank you so much for sharing.
Yeah, it's only a pleasure. You know, I think it comes back to what we've said earlier in the year as well, is that the more you can make these things tangible, the more you can realize what the behaviors are to work towards, now it becomes something to really hold yourself accountable to. Whereas often leadership can feel quite vague in some ways and very broad. And so that's why I think I gravitate towards this transformational leadership ideas, because it's quite clear that these are the behaviors. Of course, there are other behaviors as well, but it just helps me to think, like, am I showing up in this kind of way? And when I poll people, you know, it's kind of all over the show. I haven't seen one characteristic that stands out as the one that people struggle with the most. It's kind of like they struggle with everything at the same time. And that's because as leaders, you are also leading change, but you're also dealing with all that change yourself. So it's tough to play that dual role.
Very good. Very good, very good, very good.
Cool.
Thank you, Eric.
Good so one, that's slightly longer. Yeah, slightly longer episode of good. The Expanse of today. But thank you so much.
Yeah,
definitely, definitely. Yeah. Thank you for spending some time with us today. We hope that you enjoyed learning about transformational leadership and how to go about it. It really is, there's so much that goes into all of this. And it's never just the one thing. You know, as John was mentioning, it's also the inner work and the meditation that we do. It is the intentionality that we bring to behaviors. And so that's what we try and really showcase on the pod is how do we bring all of this together? It's never just one thing. It's always the accumulation of things, the accumulation of the inner work that you do, the accumulation of the external behaviors that you focus on. And so we hope that you'll stick around. We'll hope that you'll come and learn with us as we try and navigate this crazy world we find ourselves in. But as always, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for spending some time with us. We know you have many other options as well. Find us on iTunes, on Spotify, on YouTube. If you feel so inclined, we'd love to hear from you. You can do that by leaving a review on iTunes. And otherwise, until next week, stay expansive.
Ciao.